be concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
We're starting today with the topic of abortion, and this is a topic that there was a period of time where it was less of an issue. There was less of a question as to whether Roe v. Wade was going to remain the law of the land. But now with the Supreme Court potentially just weeks away from issuing a ruling that would uphold state restrictions on abortion, which would effectively reverse Roe v. Wade and the undue burden standard that Roe v. Wade contains, which we will get to, that we are seeing, expectedly, as predicted, more and more states pass the types of laws that we have seen from Mississippi and from Texas and from elsewhere. And the latest state to do this is now Oklahoma. Oklahoma lawmakers have passed a six-week abortion ban modeled after the Texas law that allows civil enforcement. That's another element of this that is wacky retrograde stuff, civil enforcement of this law. And we will talk about why a six-week abortion ban is effectively just a ban on abortion, which unquestionably would violate Roe v. Wade's undue burden clause, except Roe v. Wade may be reversed. So let's read about this first. Associated Press reporting. Oklahoma lawmakers Thursday gave final approval to a bill modeled after the controversial Texas abortion law. We knew every state that wants to ban abortion is going to start using that type of, they will use each other as models. It is a law which allows private citizens to take civil action against abortion providers as individuals to enforce the law. It's a sort of vigilantism in practice. The Oklahoma Heartbeat Act, Senate Bill 1503, would prohibit abortions at the time when a physician can detect early cardiac activity in an embryo or fetus. Now, understand that it is not, some like to say it is a heartbeat. And doctors often say this is reflexive cardiac activity. To call it a heartbeat isn't even accurate. That can be as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy before many women even know they are pregnant. The measure also provides exceptions for medical emergencies. The state Senate later Thursday also passed House Bill 4327, allowing private citizens to sue abortion providers. House Bill 4327, however, would prohibit abortions at any point of pregnancy with exceptions for medical emergencies or if the pregnancy comes as the result of rape, sexual assault, incest, and is reported to law enforcement. So there's two parts of this. First, we've already talked because of the Texas bill about this ability for an individual to sue the abortion provider. It's another way to put, in this case, it's not only the government between doctors and their patients, but random people between doctors and their patients, if anybody can bring a civil suit. But I want to focus in on the six-week ban thing, because the defenders of this bill who want to at least pretend about the rule of law, which is Roe v. Wade established that, generally speaking, women should have access to abortion services and that no undue burden should be placed on them in order to obtain one. Now, undue burden is a legal term that's subject to interpretation. And this is where, I mean, for 40 years, that phrase, undue burden, has been subject to interpretation by courts at all levels. But a six-week ban would absolutely violate that. And just think it through. Many women, most women, don't know that they're pregnant until 4 to 5 weeks. And what I mean by that is by the time you miss a period and by the time most home pregnancy tests can detect a pregnancy, you're already considered to be 4 or 5 weeks pregnant at minimum. If you at that point were to say, hey, I got a positive pregnancy test. I'm going to go to my doctor, my OBGYN. They will say, oh yeah, it's not you're pregnant and it's the first week. They would say you are, practically speaking, 4, potentially 5 weeks pregnant at this point of time. And if the requirement is no abortions after 6 weeks, what that means is you need to say, oh, well, I need an abortion like tomorrow. And of course, that is unreasonable. That is an undue burden, even if one can decide that quickly. If most of you have tried to get medical appointments lately, you might know you don't call and they don't give you an appointment for tomorrow. That's generally a difficult thing to do. So in practical terms, this is designed to be a total abortion ban, and it effectively would be by enforcing the six-week rule. We will see what happens in the Supreme Court. This bill, this law will be appealed. Based on current law, it would be found against Roe v. Wade. It would place an undue burden on women. You can't say six-week ban. Most women don't find out till week 4 or 5 if they're pregnant. Right. So right now it would violate Roe v. Wade. If in a few weeks the Supreme Court says, well, we're OK with this law in, I believe it's Mississippi, that would effectively overturn Roe v. Wade. And that would make it so that laws like this one in Oklahoma and the one in Texas and others likely would be allowed. And of course, this then gets us into that situation where what happens? Do people start fleeing red states for blue states, or what is the right thing to do? What is the expected thing to do? We don't know yet, but this is exactly what we did. Go back to the beginning. Go back to my shows when I was saying, hey, you know, guys, I'm worried. This is 2016. I'm worried that there's too many people who aren't taking seriously this issue of the Supreme Court when they think about Trump versus Hillary. They go, oh, I don't know if it's not going to be this person, if it's not going to be that person. Hillary, Trump, it's all the same. And I would say, folks, you have no idea what a few conservative Supreme Court picks by Trump would do to this country. The first thing they will do is they are going to try to ban abortion. And then Trump got one pick, and then he got a second pick, and then he got a third pick. And then we knew they're going to start the state level bills. The point of those bills is that they be appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court might say no on the first one. They might say no on the second one. They might not like some specific aspect of the third one. But if they do it enough with this right-wing court, thanks to Trump defeating Hillary, and we have to be honest that that's what put us in this position, they may well overturn Roe v. Wade. We may be weeks from the end of Roe v. Wade. We are continuing to follow the 2022 midterms. Last week, we looked at both the Democratic and Republican primary debates in the Pennsylvania Senate race. We will be looking at another debate in that race Wednesday night. I will be streaming. The Republicans, including Mehmet Oz and a bunch of other wackos, are going to be debating, and we'll be covering that live. But today I want to talk a little bit about Georgia. Georgia has a number of interesting races, and they involve significant controversy. In Georgia, you've got the gubernatorial election. That is an important race because of the role that Georgia played in 2020 and could play in 2024 in the election, and who is governor and secretary of state, a very big deal. Marjorie Taylor Greene, at this point, wildly perjuring herself, inciting an insurrection. She is involved in a race for re-election, and there are debates happening there as well. And what I want you to think about as you watch some of these clips, there were a number of Georgia debates over the weekend. We'll look at gubernatorial. We will look at also Marjorie Taylor Greene. They seem like Saturday Night Live skits. And I'm not just talking about the accents. I know people in Georgia, in certain parts, there's a certain education level where there's a certain accent. That's not what I'm talking about. These seem like characters out of a skit where we are pretending to be the most weaponized, disinformed caricatures of what it means to be an American right winger. When we think of how do you depict your typical American right winger in a film for a British audience, it would be like these people. Let's go with the first clip. This is Candace Taylor running for the Georgia governor's race. And let's just listen. I won't even tell. There's really no way to introduce this properly. Take a look.
I'm going to put the Constitution first, and I'm going to put Jesus first every single time.
Wait, your guiding philosophy will be Jesus first. You're supposed to be a representative of the state's civil government, which is a separation of church and state. But she openly says Jesus will be number one for her.
And we're going to fix our schools. We're going to get rid of this anti-white racism and oppression of our children of color. We're going to get.
And again, children, is that a normal thing? I don't want to make fun of accents, but is that a normal thing? Children?
Rid of the transgender manipulation, and we're going to ensure that boys aren't in our girls' bathrooms and girls aren't in our boys' bathrooms and people aren't being raped. And we're going to get rid of kindergarten teachers, men with beards and lipstick and high heels teaching our children. We're going to get back to being moral in Georgia. We're going to put morality over money. I'm Candace Taylor. I'm the one you've been waiting for.
Right. That is dark ages stuff. And is it even okay to say, I know sometimes people get mad when you say dark ages, but That's dark ages stuff. That's retrograde. That's taking us back to, you know, sometimes we say they want to take us to 1955. With some of these people, it's almost like they want to take us to 1855, United States. Here's another clip of Candace Taylor talking about what was going on. All of the bad things about schools having been closed for a period of time during the COVID pandemic.
You do as governor, what would you push to help address those issues dealing with academics?
Absolutely. It's gotten way worse because of the pandemic, because our governor opened the state, which was great, but he didn't open the school.
Now, did she say the planned pandemic? I want to go back because that's another wild conspiracy. This is almost like, remember the disinformation film Plandemic, which argued it was all planned by the globalist elite, as Alex Jones would say. Thinly veiled anti-Semitism, by the way, because those globalist elites happen to be mostly Jewish. Did she say the planned pandemic? Let me listen.
It's gotten way worse because of the planned pandemic, because our government...
Maybe it was just a stutter. It's almost like she said the planned pandemic. Let's listen.
When our opened the state, which was great, but it didn't open the schools. And so kids were at home for a year, not ingrained in education and routine. Children need routine. And what we saw happen is children with depression or children that were being molested. Let's talk about the hard stuff. Kids that are being molested never had a reprieve. They were molested day after day after day, and their parents were not teaching them anything. And so staying consistent, for one thing, and offering after school programs and offering things to get them.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it is absolutely true that one of the things about being stuck at home, and we saw this with couples where there's domestic violence, oftentimes leaving to work was when you got a break from the domestic violence. That is true. But this sort of framing, completely ignoring the actual circumstances that were happening medically. Imagine this is the governor. Very, very dangerous. Next, we'll go to from the Georgia gubernatorial to Georgia 14th district. There was a Republican primary debate. The incumbent in that seat is radical, repugnant, reactionary Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. And she was in a debate with Jennifer Strahan. And her behavior was so childish and so absurd that the moderator actually had to cut her mic because she just wouldn't stop talking. Marjorie Taylor Greene would not stop talking.
Conservative, it takes courage, takes bravery to vote no to bills that have poison pills inside of them and things that should never be passed. And that's how the Democrats running Congress, that's how they're writing bills right now. And that is why voting record I have, I'm very proud of.
She doesn't get it.
We don't get a rebuttal.
Guys,
no, you would have voted for the NDA. You
but
said you would vote for it.
You're
voting for transgender surgeries.
Okay.
Oh, wow. And then just the relief of the silence when Marjorie Taylor Greene stopped speaking. It's like, you know, when it's like you're at a loud concert and it's just like, wow, this is grating. This is grating. And then all of a sudden it goes silent and you go, wow, the tranquility, sir, of the silence. That is what I experience when Marjorie Taylor Greene stops talking. So that was totally off the rails. And then also in the congressional debate, a guy named Eric Cunningham is running, and he tries to deliver a statement about he will also out Jesus everybody else, but he weirdly like loses his train of thought and just seems visibly confused. They're not sending their best, my friends.
Cunningham, I have strong core Christian conservative values, and I want to emphasize one word in there, Christian. It's my faith that brought me into this race. And it's my faith that will lead me when I go to Congress to fight some of the woke transgender, you name it, agenda that they have they're trying to force on us.
So he seems confused by his own ideas. And of course, at this point, these are just buzzwords. Woke, we're going to fight woke. We're going to fight transgender. We're going to fight. Trump now at his rally saying teachers shouldn't be allowed to teach transgender. Grammatically ambiguous for sure. Morally depraved too. So it's actually the 2022 midterms are ramping up so quickly. It's actually tough to keep track. I also wanted to look at some clips from what's going on in Arizona in some of the primary races there. Some of these primaries are this week, by the way, and we'll talk about that tomorrow, Tuesday. But no shortage of cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs people that, unfortunately, I'd love to say these people have no shot, but Marjorie Taylor Greene is in Congress now. So we know they have a shot. Let me know who you're most worried about. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. Lest anyone forget, the David Pakman Show is an audience-supported program. We do the daily program that you're listening to or watching right now, and we do an extra show called The Bonus Show every single weekday for our members. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. You can also use the coupon code WOW22 to get yourself a tidy little discount off of the cost of membership. Joinpakman.com is the place to sign up. I want to play a clip for you guys today, which I believe is a perfect example of how Democrats should be dealing with these neo-reactionary Republicans in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. You know, one of the conversations we've had over the last few years is that even though the right has absolutely no minimum standard whatsoever for what they won't do, what they're not willing to do, we on the left shouldn't sink to their level in the sense of telling straight up lies, fabricating imaginary social issues, employing horrifying double standards, personal attacks, all of these different things. But what Democrats should appeal to is the public's sort of sense of justice and emotions in order to get them to understand the stakes of so many things. This is really one for the ages. Congressman Jamie Raskin, a Democrat, who I'm a fan of. I like Jamie Raskin. I've talked about him before. He ripped Marjorie Taylor Greene to shreds during a floor debate supposedly about Ukraine. It's supposedly about the brutal invasion of Ukraine by Vladimir Putin. She said nothing about it. She instead talked about the southern border and made a whole bunch of other completely fact-free claims. And Jamie Raskin takes her to task, and I wish more Democrats in the House, day in and day out, spoke about their extremist Republican colleagues in this way. Maybe it could help them hold the House in November. Take a look at this.
Attacked. It's a shame. It's a tragedy. I yield back the remainder of my
reserve. Gentlewoman's time has expired. Gentleman from Pennsylvania reserves. Gentleman from Maryland is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, the United States of America just witnessed the most astonishing spectacle. We are here to debate aid to the people of Ukraine defending themselves against a massive invasion by Vladimir Putin and his army.
Right.
Then the minority puts up the distinguished general lady from Georgia who does not mention Ukraine once.
And by the way, yes, I believe his use of the term distinguished gentle lady about Marjorie Taylor Greene, I believe it's tongue in cheek.
She does not mention the thousands of Ukrainian civilians who've been slaughtered by Putin's army. She does not mention more than 100 Ukrainian children who've been shot and killed by the Ukrainian army. Instead, she talks about a massive invasion at the border, a massive invasion which their own speakers have said today hundreds of thousands of people have been apprehended in. That's very different from a military invasion, the one in Ukraine. Of course, the general lady is not going to talk about that. She had a lot to say the other day when she heckled me continuously. When I came to the floor, it was like the Rocky Horror Picture Show in here with her chanting about the Russia hoax and Russia this and Russia that. Now she had the opportunity to tell the world what her views about Russia are. I put them out there, exactly what she has said. She said that the aid that the taxpayers of America are sending to the people of Ukraine to defend themselves against Vladimir Putin and the Russian army falls into the hands of Nazis. I want to see her proof. Where's her evidence? She talks about NATO Nazis. Does my minority believe that our allies in NATO who are trying to defend the people of Ukraine are Nazis? Has it come to this? General Lady talked about a massive invasion. We had a massive invasion of our own chamber. And she continued to be a cheerleader for the insurrection.
This is exactly why I keep talking about Jamie Raskin as someone that I would support for president, of course, depending on who else is running and depending on what his platform would be. But in principle, someone I would support for president. He's a constitutional law professor. He actually knows the Constitution. Marjorie Taylor Greene loves to talk about the Constitution. Madison Cawthorn loves to claim that he's defending the Constitution. They don't know a damn thing about it. This is actually a constitutional law professor. Raskin was a strong progressive activist when he was in the Maryland Senate. He actually worked with Republicans and moderate Democrats and got things done. He sponsored bills to get rid of the death penalty in Maryland, to establish legal guidelines for corporations to prevent them from raping and pillaging the resources of the state for their gain. He was actually a board member of Fair Vote, which is an interesting organization. He sponsored the first bill in the country for the national popular vote I've talked about so much, which would be a way to get rid of the Electoral College without actually having to change the Constitution. He has this long, you know, marijuana reform, all these different things. This is what has to be done. We need a guy like Raskin talking about them as the extremists that they are. Wanting everybody to have health care is not the left equivalent of supporting a coup. They have nothing to do with each other. And the level of extremism that we are seeing from the right requires and demands people like Raskin who can speak in this way. Now, Raskin's not the only guy. I've talked about other people I like as well. But Democrats need to be talking like this more frequently, and I'm glad to see him do it. You know, one of the questions we've been asking during this historic anti-vaccine era around the world because of the COVID vaccines is anti-vax going to start to bleed over to more general vaccine opposition, not just the COVID vaccine? What about measles? What about MMR and others? And so far, the answer appears to be, unfortunately, yes. And this was very predictable. There's a good article in The Guardian. Measles cases surge nearly 80%. In the wake of COVID chaos, with fears other diseases could follow. UNICEF says virus is canary in the coal mine that shows up, I think it's supposed to say, shows us the gaps in vaccination campaigns for preventable illness. Measles cases have surged nearly 80% worldwide amid disruption caused by COVID, the UN says. The coronavirus pandemic has interrupted vaccination campaigns for non-COVID diseases around the world, creating a perfect storm that could put millions of children's lives at risk. Measles is a disease caused by a virus that attacks mainly children. Vaccination uptake of at least 95% is the way to avoid it spreading. Some countries fall short of that goal, Somalia at just 46%. There's also concerns about whether yellow fever could surge. There are concerns about the Ukrainian invasion by Russia and the effect that that could have. The UN says 57 vaccination campaigns in 43 countries have been postponed. So this is focusing on access. But the problem is we saw outbreaks in the United States of measles before the COVID pandemic. So the point here is basically twofold. Because of the pandemic, there have been campaigns of vaccination that have been interrupted. And they tell us how quickly you can see outbreaks of something as contagious as measles, which in particular is a problem among children. In the United States, a big sort of battle line on the anti-vax front is the vaccination of children. Before we even had the COVID vaccines and this controversy, we had some pretty good size measles outbreaks. There was the Disneyland one in California. There were some religious sects in New York City where we were seeing outbreaks. There was one in Italy, a couple others that I can't remember. These outbreaks were in part based on the idea that parents didn't want to vaccinate their kids. Now, with measles, understand how critical that is, particularly when it's so contagious that you need to be vaccinating 95%. It is a concern right now that we are going to start seeing as more and more kids come up for vaccination boosters for other diseases, or as more and more kids are born and it's time for them to get the shots that babies get in the first 6 months. We are almost certainly going to see some more general vaccine hesitancy on the basis of COVID vaccine hesitancy, and it's going to lead to more of some of these diseases. And the measles pre-COVID example is one of the best ones. Just small areas where they said, I don't want to vaccinate my kid against measles. And they had outbreaks, and it's very serious for kids. It could get very, very bad. And so while on the one hand, we're fighting the vaccination battle on COVID specifically, there's this other more general anti-vax thing that is beneath the surface. And we've heard from some, look at the interviews we've seen from Trump rallies where parents say, well, it's not just the COVID vaccine. I'm getting my kids off of all of these vaccines. Or sometimes they call them, they say they're injections. They're not strictly speaking vaccines. This could get very bad very quickly. And we should be paying close attention to the numbers from all over the world. We'll have more about this story on our Instagram. Make sure you're following us there at David Pakman Show. We'll take a quick break. We'll look at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We'll look at a few other things. Be right back. I don't really care very much about the White House Correspondents Association dinner. This is a dinner that Donald Trump would not attend, but that typically presidents go to, and you schmooze with the people who are covering your presidency. Jokes are told. They bring in comedians. This year, the comedian was Trevor Noah. It's not really an event I care about, and I thought about covering it live and then decided I don't even really care about it. I don't think I'm going to cover it. But there are a few interesting moments from it that I want to go over. And these are from Joe Biden. Now, of course, Joe Biden didn't write this stuff, but it doesn't matter. The points that are made here are interesting and they're pretty funny. One aspect of this that was sort of controversial was that to go to this event, you had to provide proof that you were not only double vaccinated against COVID, but also boosted. And Fox News has a table, or at least one table, maybe multiple tables at this event. And of course, on air, Fox News has run significant anti-vaccine interference. Hilariously, they were there. And Joe Biden pointed out one of the great things about this event is you can look at the people sitting at the Fox News table, know that regardless of what they're saying on air, they are vaccinated and boosted. Check this out.
We're here to show the country that we're getting through this pandemic. Plus, everyone had to prove they're fully vaccinated and boosted. So if you're at home watching this and you're wondering how to do that, just contact your favorite Fox News reporter. They're all here, vaccinated and boosted. All of them.
And there it cuts to Peter Ducey, one of the main antagonists of White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. It is on the one hand a relatively kind of cheap joke and obvious line, and the people who most need to hear it probably aren't watching this event, but it is a great reminder that many of the people making you question whether you should go and get the COVID vaccine by using spurious claims and non-evidence-based reporting, they are vaccinated. They're vaccinated. And you could say, well, they're vaccinated by force because they needed to in order to, well, not really. I mean, Fox News had an option for not being vaccinated. You could choose to test daily if that's what you wanted to do. But they are making you hesitant to go and get a vaccine. They are vaccinated. They are having a good time at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So that was a good moment. Now, for all we know, they bought fake vaccine cards. Seems risky as a member of a prominent media outlet to use a fake vaccination certificate or card to get into a White House Correspondents' Dinner. So probably not. Laura Ingraham, by the way, reportedly was there. She's been a major anti-vax voice. This confirms, if indeed she was there, that she's double vaccinated as well as boosted. Joe Biden with another funny line talking about the plague and Trump. I won't spoil it for you. I'll just play it for you.
It's the first time the president attended this dinner in 6 years. It's It's understandable. We had a horrible plague followed by 2 years of COVID.
I know it's kind of cheesy, but I like it.
Just imagine if my predecessor came to this dinner this year. Now that would really have been a real coup if that occurred.
I don't know, guys. I know a lot, you know, this is not a policy thing, but I liked what Biden did. I thought it was the exact right sort of tone. He also, and I mean, he is taking on some very serious issues. The next topic he broached was these text messages where we learned that Mark Meadows, Trump's former chief of staff, as the insurrectionist coup attempt was going on, he was texting with a variety of Fox News hosts, including Sean Hannity. Everybody was kind of giving orders and strategizing back and forth. Really no fresh air between the administration and Fox to speak of. And Biden commented on that as well. Take a look.
Fox News, I'm really sorry your preferred candidate lost the last election. To make it up to you, I'm happy to give my chief of staff to you all so he can tell Sean Hannity what to say every day.
And then the camera cutting to Fox reporter John Roberts, who genuinely didn't seem to like that. Fox News really ridiculed during this, but deservedly so. I mean, Mark Meadows was texting Sean Hannity and telling him what to say, and it's embarrassing, and it's a joke, and it's pathetic. So really nicely done. I didn't really care for the sort of actual comedians who did. I just am not super into it, although Trevor Noah did have some funny lines, but Biden got a bunch of good stuff there. And these are important issues. And to be perfectly frank, there might be people who aren't even aware about some of these things because they don't really watch news, but they hear about this as an entertainment event. Maybe they watched it. Maybe they go text messages, Hannity, Mark Meadows. What's up with that? Let me look that up and go, wow. Trump's chief of staff was telling Sean Hannity what to say. That's not exactly fair and balanced news. It's not even really news or reporting anyway. It's just propaganda. So nice job by Joe Biden. Doesn't mean he's doing any better or worse of a job as president. He just did a nice job at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which I generally speaking, don't care about, but did enjoy watching it this time. The other thing that I have to tell you I enjoyed watching this weekend, and usually I don't enjoy this, Donald Trump glitched very badly, causing psychiatric nurses to email me and to say, David, I'm recognizing what's going on with Trump. So this is pretty serious. Donald Trump was scheduled to have a rally in Nebraska on Friday evening. There were big storms, and so the rally was postponed until yesterday, Sunday. And Donald Trump truly seemed to have completely lost his wits. He didn't seem to know what was going on. This was a nearly 2 hour long, it was like a sprawling, almost Fidel Castro like droning on about nothing. Nearly 2 hours of this stuff. The crowd was as bored as ever, and Trump continued to have these brain glitches making no sense, just like Swiss cheese. You know, mayonnaise is up there in his skull. My absolute favorite moment, and I tweeted about this right away, and it started trending on Twitter, and then the clip ultimately getting millions of views. Trump didn't know who he had endorsed. Trump claimed that he endorsed a non-existent candidate, blending the names of two different candidates, and looking off to the side saying, who did we endorse? This is an incredible moment. Take a look at this.
That's what they're waiting for. They're waiting for one race. You know, we've endorsed Dr. Oz. We've endorsed JP, right? J.D. Mandel. And he's doing great.
So let me back that up. First, he says, we've endorsed JP, right? And he looks over to the side. JP? I don't know. Who's JP? He says, we've endorsed J.D. Mandel. Now, this is a blend of two people who are running against each other. In the Ohio Republican Senate primary, J.D. Vance is one candidate and Josh Mandel is another candidate. Now, It's not just that Trump doesn't know who the hell he endorsed and he makes up a name of a person that doesn't exist. Mandel spent the entire election cycle trying to get Trump's endorsement. He didn't get it. Trump goes to J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance basically threw himself at the altar of Trump and said anything he could, apologized for the criticisms of Trump from years ago in order to finally get Trump's endorsement. And then Trump ends up mentioning his opponent. Trump ends up mentioning the guy he's running against by saying J.D. Mandel. 2 days before the primary, he confuses who he even endorsed. If Biden did this, they'd be saying, oh, we got to remove him for the 25th Amendment. He's demented. He's got dementia. He can't think. After seeing this, I got an email from a nurse educator who also worked as an aged care registered nurse and said, this is a quote from her. I cared for people with dementia for many years and know a lot about it. Trump demonstrates a telling symptom of dementia called perseverance. He says the same phrases over and over again. Everyone knows it's more than has ever happened before, and it's really a shame. He uses the same gestures over and over again, pointing upward, making the circle with the thumb and forefinger. He tells the same stories over and over again. He seems unable to grasp and repeat new stories. In this case, this is new stuff, right? J.D. Mandel, these are new candidates. He doesn't know what's going on. He uses simple language with restricted vocabulary. He pads his language with unnecessary phrases. He can't speak specifically, only in generalities. No one can diagnose dementia with certainty in this way, but it doesn't look good. By the way, this J.D. Mandel gaffe hasn't appeared on Truth Social. It hasn't appeared on Getter. The users on Parler aren't talking about it. Fox News isn't talking about it. They'll never even know that it happened. It's almost like that time when Trump got Obama's name wrong.
Obama.
You guys remember that? Okay. So then just glitch after glitch after glitch. There was no actual substance to the rally, so I won't even bore you with it. But then at another point, Trump glitched on Mitt Romney's name, and you can see that he kind of has this twitch when he does it.
Even though it was totally made up, that was about a guy named a rhino named Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney.
It's almost quite literally like someone stopping a record. Mitt Romney. Listen to it once more.
Even though it was totally made up, that was about a guy named a rhino named Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney.
That is really quite a noise. And then lastly, trying to talk about Billy the Kid, I guess talking about Billy the Kid's bovine counterpart, Billy the Cud. This one is wacky.
I've had more investigations than Jesse James, Billy the Kid.
You really don't know whether to laugh or cry, but this is a guy who seems very unwell. And it's a combination of weaponized narcissism. I don't know what else, you know, Fidel Castro was known. Castro was known for 4 or 5 hour speeches. Trump, 2 hours of Trump is as bad as 5 of Castro, I would argue. Just endlessly going over a lot of the same stuff, crowd visibly bored. And then the glitches. The glitches are just coming so frequently. So what's going on with them? I don't know. But even Trump now is saying, you know, it's possible that health might be a reason I don't run in 2024. Who knows? We're going to keep following it. And again, for all the people saying Biden doesn't look good, if you look at Biden at the White House Correspondents' Dinner this weekend, and you look at Trump talking about J.D. Mandel, a quite literally imaginary person, seems pretty clear to me which one's worse off. We'll take a quick break and be back right after this. It's not been a particularly good couple of weeks for radical Trumpist Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. She, of course, had these incredible hearings about her involvement in allegedly inciting the Trump riot insurrection, during which she very obviously perjured herself multiple times, lying under oath. She then was exposed further by some leaked text messages involving Donald Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, in which she seems to very clearly be telling him, you know, people are talking about and maybe we should look into this whole martial law thing. Now, hilariously, she misspelled martial law, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, like the name rather than M-A-R-T-I-A-L. That's sort of like a sidebar comedy element to the entire thing. But she was finally confronted about these text messages by CNN reporter Jim Acosta. He did the ambush thing, as I call it, where he just kind of found her on the street, as far as we know. Now, I want to be open to the possibility that this was scheduled and this was just the way it developed, where it was, yeah, you can talk to me as I walk between meetings. As far as I know, this was sort of like the ambush style. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit because I have some thoughts about that approach. But the subject matter here is fascinating. And you might notice that Jim Acosta does a really nice touch here where he mentions the misspelling of Marshall a bunch of times during this confrontation. So pay attention to that. Notice how Marjorie Taylor Greene will not stop speaking. Her approach is to try to not let Acosta even get a word in. Check it out.
You don't seem to recall a lot.
What's going on there?
You know, Jim, you have a show, and in all fairness, you try to present this image of me to your viewers, and it's just really not correct.
Well, we're just trying to get some answers. Did you send a text asking for the president to declare martial law? Did you do that?
You know, I don't recall those being my text messages, but have you read the text message that is... that you're referring to?
I did. It actually says it was misspelled, but it seemed to say...
So first mention of the misspelling.
Actually, it says, if you read it correctly, Jim, your problem is you're lying again right now. It says, I do not know on those things. That's what that text message...
One of the funniest things that has to be mentioned is, on the one hand, she won't actually own up to it being her text. Now, of course it is. It's her text. There's no dispute about the technical aspect of it. But she keeps saying the text is being misrepresented. It's like, well, if you didn't send it, if you're sticking by, I don't even recall that it's my text, does it really matter what it said if it's not even really your text? She wants to play both sides on it.
Why don't you bring up martial law?
No,
you know, your problem is you're just one of those liars on television. And people hate it. They can't stand the liars on television.
I'm not the one saying I don't recall.
Quote the supposed text message. Quote it. What does it say? I don't know those things.
If you want to hang on, let's read it out loud. Okay,
Why don't you be honest for once?
And the entire time he's looking for it, she's just badgering him.
Read it out loud.
Let's take a look. My question is, read it out loud.
What does it actually say?
Okay.
What is the text message? Read the whole thing.
Let's look at it. Okay.
Yeah, let's read it.
But you're saying you don't recall it.
I don't know if that's my text message or not, but if you want to talk about a text...
I don't even know if I said it, but you'd damn well better quote me correctly from it so that you actually tell people what I meant. In the text message, I don't even know if I sent.
Message. Read the text message. Let's take a look. Okay, read the exact text message that you're talking about.
I'll read it. Let's take a look here.
Oh, we got an article. Why don't you find the actual text message?
Let's see here. Hang on a second. In our private chat with only members, several are saying the only way to save our republic is for Trump to call for martial law. Marshall was not spelled. Keep going with the text message. I don't know on those things.
Wait, I just wanted you to tell him. Is that what that says? It says, I don't know those things.
But why are you bringing it up?
Wait, hold on, stop. This text message that's supposedly mine, I don't know if it is. What is it?
Jim, you're misquoting me from a text message that is supposedly mine, but I don't know.
It says some members, and then it says, wait, hold on. It says, I don't know if that's my text. It says, I don't know on those things. Why don't you tell that story?
You're saying you don't know. You're lying. You're defensive about it. Why do people not like you? Why are you being so defensive? Because you're a liar.
Why do you want to lie on television for your viewers?
I'm not trying to lie.
No, you're trying to ask you. No, you're accusing me of something, and then when you read the actual words, it tells another story.
So... the constant talking to try to prevent him from actually getting a word in, that's a technique that's often used. It's the same technique she used in the debate last night. At the top of the show, we covered some of the Georgia elections that are going on. One of them is Marjorie Taylor Greene's Republican primary. She had her mic cut yesterday at a debate, or the day before. I found the clip yesterday. Maybe it was from the day before. She had her mic cut because she wouldn't stop talking. Okay, so this is a strategy that she employs. It's a technique, a tactic, I guess we would say. She also simultaneously doesn't recall whether it's actually her text message, but is mad that what she meant to say is being misinterpreted. How do you know what you meant to say if it's not even clear you sent the message? If I say, I don't know whether I wrote it, how can I know what the intention of the writer is. If it's me, I would know, but I'm saying I don't actually remember. It's full on doublespeak. Now, let me talk a little bit about ambush style. Let's assume that this was ambush style, meaning Jim Acosta just kind of found her, was waiting for her, showed up with a camera. It's not a tactic I use. And the reason I don't do it is it doesn't strike me as fair as a general thing. We have an interview process and sometimes people decline to be interviewed. And I don't like that, but I respect it in the sense that I can't compel. So, the same way that I can't compel Harvard to allow me to speak there, right? We have these conservatives often say, I'm being silenced because a school won't have me for an event. It's like, well, no, they don't have to. People don't have to speak to me. So for me, if I request an interview, people don't want to do it. For me to then show up and kind of ambush them, to me, it doesn't feel like the right thing to do. However, I am sensitive to an explanation that sometimes is given for using the technique for people in positions of power, which is they are in a position of power. They have legislative authority in this case. They can be involved in making law, all these different, they're supposed to be accountable to the people. And they won't answer real basic questions about, are you lying? Are you telling lies? What's going on here? When you say you don't recall, but then here's the text, is it yours? And they won't sit down and actually be questioned. You can make the case that reporters are left with no choice. So there are circumstances where if it's truly a reporter and someone in a position of power, I get having no other option. It's not a technique I use, but I can see both sides of the discussion. Let me know what you think about the technique. Send me your thoughts and maybe we'll do a follow-up on the ambush technique. I want to do just a brief interlude here about MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. This is actually very interesting what's going on because it's bigger than Pillow. This is about Twitter. It's not even really a rumor. With the news that in principle, Elon Musk is going to be buying Twitter, although it's not been approved, it may fall apart. And to be perfectly frank, I'm a little bit more and more and more in the direction of this may never happen, but that's a story for a different day. There are lots of right wingers that are sort of reinvigorated who have been banned from Twitter, who believe they're sure they're going to be back on Twitter, that Elon personally is going to allow them back on Twitter. One such person is MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, known colloquially as Mike Pillow or just Pillow for short. He decided to evade his ban by creating a new account, and it lasted 3 hours. Now, remember, even if Elon Musk plans to unban Pillow, which we have no reason to think, at least at this point, Elon Musk is not in control right now. A Business Insider reporting, Lindell was banned from Twitter in 2021 over election misinformation, but rejoined the platform Sunday. The account was quickly banned for violating Twitter's ban evasion policy. Jack Dorsey should be first in line for prison, Lindell told Insider, Business Insider, via text. Hello, everybody. I'm back on Twitter, he tweeted. My only account is Mike J. Lindell. Please retweet, follow to spread the word. The tweet also featured a video of Pillow confirming the account is his. All those other ones are fake accounts and they've been using my name out there. So we started this account. Please share it with everybody. Let everybody know so we can get the word out at Twitter in case they do take it down. Thanks a lot for helping out. 3.5 hours later, the account was suspended. So Twitter has what's called a ban evasion policy. And if you've been banned, you're not allowed to attempt to evade it by making a similar account. Like if my D. Pacman account was banned, it's not just the account, it's me as a person that is banned. And we can like it or we can not like it. And I'll talk about that in a second. I can't then go and create Dave Pacman. And if Twitter finds out that that's actually me, of course, they would be within their terms of service to ban me again. Now, I do want to say something about these Twitter bans. I am sensitive to the idea that maybe there shouldn't be bans for life. I could be convinced of that. I think that the Trump ban was completely correct and legitimate. I think that the Lindell ban was completely correct and legitimate. But I would be open to the idea that the maximum ban is a 5-year ban or a 3-year ban. I mean, people do change, and I'm not saying Trump will change, but also what's acceptable changes. And great examples are, like, on YouTube, policies around many issues have changed over time. Early in COVID, there was one policy on COVID material. Later, it was different. I could go on. You can get the idea. It's sort of, in a way, I mean, this isn't a serious, I'm being honest, it's not a serious, but when you, more seriously, there are people doing time for drug possession, and later the penalties for drug possession are reduced, or possession is decriminalized, or possession is legalized. And I think that that should be subject to review. And that's why I like it when Joe Biden and others have kind of gone back and exonerated or commuted sentences on that basis. So I think there's a good case to be made that the lifetime ban on Twitter maybe is a bit much. Maybe it should be 3 years, maybe 5 years or something like that. It is not currently the case. And of course, Pillow is evading the ban. One other thing on Mike Pillow here. He was interviewed at yesterday's Trump rally. He says that he's spending 18 hours a day on this Trump reinstatement stuff. That's wild.
Dominion and machines, a machine. And, you know, it's been a crazy year and a half. But
how has your life changed personally? I know your business. And we'll get to that special promotion that you have for us in a second. But how has your personal life changed since all of this? I mean,
it's 18 hours a day where, you know, I miss my grandkids. I miss my family, you know, and my niece and nephews. I got to, you know, take advantage of when I can, but it's before I'm so into family, it's like I'm pulled away from my home state of Minnesota. Yeah. But
he's spending 18 hours a day going around talking about machines.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
And claiming that we're just a week away from it all coming out. That actually makes me a little bit sad. It really does. Not because Pillow's a particularly good guy. But there's something a little bit sad about that. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here is our friend, the troll man, asking a question which does not understand burden of proof. Listen to this.
Hey, David, it's Juan. I know this question is probably going to sound trollish. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
So you say that Republicans get caught committing voter fraud.
Right.
Possibly because they're not very smart. Would that mean...
I actually didn't say that. I said Republicans are the ones who keep getting caught committing the voter fraud, even though they're the ones who say it's the left that's doing it.
The Democrats could be committing voter fraud, but aren't getting caught because they are smart. It's just a question. The reason I ask it is because I find it unreasonable or illogical or almost impossible for there not to be at least one case of a Democrat committing voter fraud.
Yeah, there are isolated, you can find a case of a Democrat committing voter fraud. This is what's called a special pleading and a misplaced burden of proof. And so the example that I often will give is someone comes to you and they say, "Sir, David, there's an elephant in the room with you right now as you are doing the show." And I would say, okay, well, usually when there's an elephants are big, I don't see an elephant. They go, "Well, is it possible the elephant's invisible?" Okay, maybe the elephant's invisible. Let me put down some baby powder, because certainly if there's an elephant in here that's invisible, as they walk around they or breathe, they will move some of the baby powder. And they go, "No, because not only is it invisible, it's weightless and it's suspended in the air. So it's not going to move around the baby powder." And I go, "Okay, well, you know what? Let me do this. Let me throw a ball. And if there's really an elephant here, then the ball will bounce off." They go, "No, because it's a special elephant where matter can pass through it." And you keep adding, at some point, the burden of proof has to be on you to prove that there's an elephant in the room. And similarly here, the Republicans insist that Democrats are the ones committing voter fraud. It's almost never happening, but anecdotally, it's Republicans that keep getting caught. So then to come back and say, "Well, is it possible that it's really Democrats mostly committing it, but they're smarter and committing it better, so they're not getting caught?" Well, at some point, the burden has to be on you to prove that. The fact that Republicans just insist Democrats are committing voter fraud, absent any evidence, at some point, you have to prove your hypothesis about what's going on. All right, troll man, please, and thank you. We have a great bonus show for you today. Russia may be bracing for a default and rapidly approaching one. We will talk about the impact it may have. Connecticut has passed a bill to make the state a safe haven for abortion providers, the opposite of what's happening in Oklahoma, as we talked about earlier. And Joe Biden's support among Gen Z and millennials is collapsing. Why is it collapsing? We will talk about it and more on today's bonus show. Please sign up at joinpacman.com to get instant access to the bonus show. You'll also get the daily show 6 hours earlier than everybody else when you are a member. Sign up at joinpacman.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh. 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
WRCT. In sound. From way out.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh. 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
RCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth. The cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
With your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
They are not going to get away with this. Let me say that I don't care what I have to do, but they're not going to do this to D.C., and they are not going to do this to America. There's more of us than there is of them, and we are going to fight.
The Supreme Court has voted to overturn Roe v. Wade, this according to the news outlet Politico, which has published an unprecedented leaked draft of the court's majority decision. In the document, Justice Samuel Alito writes, "We hold that Roe and Casey must be overruled." We'll speak to attorney Catherine Kitty Colbert, who argued the landmark 1992 Planned Parenthood versus Casey case, as well as to law professor Michelle Goodwin, author of Policing the Womb. Then, as President Biden seeks $33 billion more dollars for Ukraine, we'll look at the dangers of U.S. military escalation with Medea Benjamin of Code Pink and George Beebe of the Quincy Institute. He's a former head of Russia analysis at the CIA and a former advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney.
We're talking more and more openly about weakening Russia's military, marginalizing Russia in the world, about Russia's strategic defeat. This is a shift that I think is fraught with danger of escalation into direct U.S.-Russian military conflict.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A majority of Supreme Court justices are prepared to overturn abortion rights, according to a leaked Supreme Court draft opinion published by Politico. The document is an internally circulated majority draft opinion written by Justice Samuel Alito that would strike down Roe v. Wade entirely, the landmark 1973 ruling that legalized abortion nationwide. In the draft, Alito also moves to overturn Planned Parenthood versus Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey, Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey, the 1992 decision that upheld Roe v. Wade. The draft majority opinion reads, quote, "Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. We hold that Roe and Casey must be overruled. It's time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives," unquote. The leaked opinion suggests five conservative justices would vote to overturn Roe, with Justices Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett joining Alito. Hundreds of protesters rallied outside the Supreme Court Monday evening after news of the court's draft opinion broke.
This is really just tearing apart everything that we've worked for and everything, all the change that we've worked for to happen. You know, it really just feels like all the work we put into was just torn up and thrown in the garbage. And it's honestly ridiculous to me because of how far we've come for it to just be set back in time. Like it feels like I jumped in a time machine and went back.
If Roe is overturned, 13 states have so-called trigger laws that would make abortion illegal as soon as the court rules. We'll get the latest after headlines. Ukrainian officials are attempting to resume the mass evacuation of civilians from Mariupol after the mayor of the besieged city said more than 200 civilians, including about 20 children, remain trapped by Russian strikes in a shelter under a massive steel plant. In Odessa, a 14-year-old boy was killed after a Russian rocket struck a strategically important bridge in the Black Sea port city. Elsewhere, Ukrainian officials said at least 9 civilians were killed by Russian fire in the Donetsk region. The UN's Human Rights Office said Monday the number of confirmed civilian deaths since the start of Russia's invasion has topped 3,000, though the death toll is likely much higher. Today, President Biden's visiting a Lockheed Martin plant in Alabama that manufactures Javelin anti-tank missiles that the U.S. is supplying.